Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It weren't until I made my debut, put the shirt on, and I thought, and you see the badge, you're like, wow, this is, I'm playing for Chelsea. This is mental. Because I was a kid who just supported the club. You know, I know it happens, you know what I mean? And I'd played at Stamford Bridge many times for West Ham. But yeah, it was just, that was quite a surreal moment, that.
Joe Cole bucks the trend in modern football. In a glittering career, he sat on both sides of the fence in some of the Premier League's fiercest and oldest rivalries. He started his career with West Ham United before joining Chelsea in 2003 as one of the first signings of Roman Abramovich's ownership. He would come close to winning everything at Stamford Bridge before leaving for Liverpool in 2010. Cole featured for Lille in the French top flight before returning to England to play for Aston Villa, West Ham United again, and Coventry City. He ended his playing career in the US with Tampa Bay Rowdies. But from a Chelsea perspective, it's those stints at West Ham and Liverpool that define him. They're clubs who don't like Chelsea, and well, the feeling is mutual when the Blues think about them. Players who cross that divide to wear another colour are rarely adored and cherished with the vigour Joe Cole is today. It can split the fan base, confuse the emotions. Yet at Chelsea, he's loved as much today as when he lifted a first Premier League trophy in 2005. Supporters treasure Cole's presence at Stamford Bridge. Indeed, now a television pundit, whenever Cole's spotted in TV studios or on the pitch with the cameras, the crowd still sings his name. It's because he allowed us all to dream. Cole was a magical talent who wore the Chelsea shirt with pride and passion. With a jink of the hips or a flick of a boot, he had the ability to leave a stadium breathless. He served Chelsea with valour during a period that would shape a true golden age in the club's storied history. And as we discuss with the number 10, he was one of our own. A Chelsea supporter who found his way from the terraces onto the hallowed turf of Stamford Bridge. I'm Kerry Levy, and together with Gary Hayes, we bring you Part one of the Joe Cole tapes.
So Joe, welcome to The Blueprint. We're telling the story about how Chelsea changed football from 92 to 2012. You're a key part of that in the middle in 2003. But of course, your Chelsea story begins before 2003. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, my Chelsea story begins before 92, really. I was a Chelsea fan. The only reason I was a Chelsea fan was because my dad, he wasn't a football fan at all. He said he supported Arsenal, but he didn't. He's only because probably someone in the pub in North London where we're from probably said they were a good team. He had no interest in football. But I went to school. I first of all lived in Lisson Green Estate, just off the Edgware Road. And my best mate was a Chelsea fan, and his dad took me to my first Chelsea game in, it was either 89 or 90, and I sat on the benches over on the west stand, and I was hooked. I'm sure it was Luton, like, and I can't remember the score of the game, but just the experience of going to the game. And then it must have been 90, around 90, because then England were playing at 1990 World Cup. And then I fell in love with England. So it's just England and Chelsea. And it was just, from that moment, like any young, the story of any young footballer, you just write, I want to play for my club. I want to play for Chelsea. I want to play for England. And then you sort of, that's your dream every time you get, you're playing with your friends or you're starting playing competitive football. I loved it.
Who were you idolising growing up?
Well, it started off, it was Kerry Dixon was probably my first idol. And then watching England, Paul Gascoigne, that was the England moment was the moment where I thought that captured me from a sort of an emotional level. Watching in Gazza at the World Cup, and then when we lost to Germany and seeing that the way it brought everyone together. My family didn't even like football really. Paul Gascoigne, Kerry Dixon. And then, you know, when I was coming to watch Chelsea, it was Dennis Wise, Andy Townsend. Who else did I like? I liked it.
Kevin Wilson,
Gordon Drury. But Dennis was probably the first time where I thought, I mean, he added a little bit of real quality. He's underestimated as a footballer, Dennis Wise. You know, everyone puts him down as someone who's tenacious, puts his foot in and all that. But I remember he scored for England against Turkey, and it's the first time a Chelsea played in a long time.
Game, we won 1-0, yeah. And we're wearing that blue shirt with the three lions coming across it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and you're there, and when you're watching England and you've got a love for a club and a love for a player, and I felt an affinity to him because he was, and when he scored, it was like, oh, yeah, amazing. Dennis Wise has scored. So I'd probably say early on, Kerry first, then but Dennis for the majority because I was a midfield player as well, similar. Yeah, that was it.
I love what you're saying there because I always say to Kerry, because we've known each other for years, and I always say I was an England fan before I was really a Chelsea fan. I'm a family of Chelsea, but it was Italia 90 for me.
Yeah.
Just did it. And I'm 40, I'm 41. What are you, 42?
41, nearly 42.
So similar age.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're a bit more talented than me.
Who knows? Listen, at what?
But, I was just a beanpo, kept getting sent off because my idol was Vinnie Jones.
Right, yeah.
My dad's like, I can't watch you anymore. Because I was just like, but Vinnie plays like this, Dad. He's on the edge. And he's like, you're not Vinnie Jones. You want to be like this. You don't. And I was like, but I just loved it. So I was always going in two-footed. Because I couldn't understand it. Like, if you play on the edge and you play like angry. And I've got four older brothers.
Yeah.
So when I go out and play with them in the park,
yeah,
I used to have to go round and really fight because I was playing like 16-year-olds, right?
Yeah. So trouble is you never knew where the edge actually existed.
He was a goalkeeper, believe it or not, being...
Really?
Being 5 foot.
Really? Yeah. I can see why that didn't work out for you. Yeah.
Really? First game, look, my parents said, please don't play in goal anymore. First game, 8-0 loss.
Oh, no.
It was awful. And it was muddy, so everyone worked out very quickly. Chip him.
But I lost my first team was a team called Paddington Rec. I think I lost every game in my first season. We didn't win a game. So if there's any young players listening, young kids, and they're not winning on us, don't worry. You can still make it. You can still do that. We literally lost every single game I played.
If we just fast forward, Joe, to the summer of 2003, it was a summer that changed your career, but it changed a lot, right? Because... that season, 2002-03, Chelsea get into the Champions League on the last day.
Yeah.
But what's going on the other side of London is West Ham got relegated. Mm-hmm. Record points total, 42 points.
Yeah. I still think it's the record now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is still now.
Yeah.
And Trevor Brookin was your assistant, your interim manager.
Yeah.
And it was a good team. There's like Jermaine was in there, yourself.
Yeah. Carrick. Yeah. Good team, but a young team. Not a very good. It was good. I'd say it was a good team, not a strong squad. The season before we finished seventh, that was at the moment I was at West Ham and I was like, I was speaking to the powers that be and I was like, right, we could kick on here. We've got good young players. Like, why don't we add a few players and didn't spend money? And actually, the squad was weaker going the next. So like I said, 42 points to get relegated. It was a tough pill to swallow for any club, particularly West Ham at that time, because that was a real moment. Like you said, they had to get rid of all the young players. Within a year, me, Carrick and Defoe had gone. Frank had left. Rio had left with the 2 years previously, and they often, West Ham fans would probably think, if we'd have kept, look at what our careers, how we progressed, and Glenn Johnson as well, keeping them as a core of a team, it could have, the landscape of football could have been very, very different if someone would have had a vision at West Ham with them players. But it wasn't meant to be. You know, I sat there, I had a year left on my contract, and the club had to sell me. You know, they said, well, look, so started talking to clubs, and it was actually, it was that Manchester United were sniffing around. Chelsea weren't in the picture at all. I think Chelsea thought, what I understand was, if Roman hadn't come in, Chelsea, I was on the list at Chelsea to come in anyway. And they apparently, I don't know, but it was Scott Parker and myself, two young players, one at Charlton, one at West Ham, which would have been in keeping with the club just progressing slightly and would have been good, two good signings at that time. Ended up signing Scott for a lot more 6 months later anyway. There was dialogue with Manchester United. Chelsea weren't in the equation. And Valencia, actually, in Spain, who just won the league. I'm a 21-year-old lad, speaking to my agent. Apparently, Pablo Aimar was... if you remember him, he was going to leave Valencia and I was going to go in there. It didn't materialise and time was ticking on. And then I just got a call. They've accepted a bid from Chelsea, completely out of the blue. I think maybe 3 or 4 days before it was, they'd inquired. And then we drove across, I come over here with my mum and dad and my agent. And me and my mum went and had a bit of lunch in the Bluebird on King's Road. And then they went in and spoke to Trevor Birch and they thrashed out a deal within about a few hours. And you're in a bit of a whirlwind as a player there because you're like, you know, it just happened so quickly. It's really, you don't have time to think. No, I'm like, before the time of Google on your phone, I'm thinking of, right, Chelsea, all right, if I go to Chelsea, I've got to get, you know, Damien Duff was here, Jeremy, Frank, Varon was coming in on the same day. I'm thinking, but you know, you think, right, how am I going to fit into this team? How am I going to get in there? It's got a phone call. They'd agreed the deal financially. I said, I just want to know, like, does Claudio want me? Chelsea were playing a friendly that night somewhere. So they phoned Claudio and he said, you know, yeah, he said, I want to have plans. He can be my key. He kept saying, you can be my key to open the door. You know, he's in his broken English. And I think at that time, Claudio really was like, he can't say anything to these players. You're going to be my guy. He doesn't know. There was players coming. It was a crazy time. So I sort of understood that he can't guarantee me first team football. I'm 21. We're signing Varon, who was a big superstar at the time. Argentina's number 10. Come from Manchester United. I was really an afterthought, if you like. You know, like just a good young player. They probably wanted to put in, just, you know, see what they can do with me, develop me. So anyway, he said, yeah, I went and met him that evening. As soon as I knew the deal was done, it was in Chelsea. Even if Manchester United would have come in, or Valencia would have come in late, because that's what usually happens. Once the ball starts rolling, the bids come in. And anyway, it happened so quick. And by the next morning, I'd done my medical and signed. I met Claudio that night and he looked exhausted. You know, he was like, he was in the eye of the storm. But I got enough from him where I thought, yeah, this is my opportunity. And then I didn't, at that time, it wasn't like, I hadn't clicked, I'm going to play for Chelsea, the club I supported, or anything like, you know, anything romantic like that. It was, you're in sort of a bit of a whirlwind. So it sort of got done. I think I spoke to JT on the phone, and then 2 days later, you walk into the club and I see Marcel Desailly, Manuel Petit, and you know, you just think, wow, this is, you know, I'm arriving at the top of the table now. We're gonna compete here. It weren't until I made my debut, put the shirt on, and I thought, and you see the badge, you're like, wow, this is, I'm playing for Chelsea, this is mental. Because I was a kid who just supported the club, you know. I know it happens, you know what I mean. And I'd played at Stamford Bridge many times, or West Ham, but yeah, it was just, that was quite a surreal moment. That,
do you remember what the reaction was from the fans? Because I was at university, it was the summer, Roman's come in, yeah. I'm working in a call centre.
Yeah.
And it was just, I was getting the papers every day, reading every paper, because all the players, and I'm not saying it because I'm sat in front of you, but you're the one that, I was watching Sky Sports News when I got in, they said Chelsea signed Joe Carr, and I jumped up like we'd scored a goal. And my mum came in, went, what's on? Oh, we just signed Joe Cole, mum. She didn't know what was going on. And then there's a guy who's in this series called David Chidge, Stanford Chidge.
Yeah.
He said when you signed, he said he had to pinch himself and he's like, I can't believe we're signing Joe Cole. That's how it meant to us as
really?
Fans.
Really? That's absolutely amazing.
Mate, I loved signing you, Chelsea signing you.
I felt the love straight away from the fans. I did, you know, which is unusual because at the end of the day, I don't think at that time people knew that I'd supported Chelsea. I was just a good young player that was playing at West Ham. Had a couple of decent games against Chelsea, but nothing to write home about. So, but I did feel that love straight away. But it was like, it's hard to really explain to people what it was like from the inside because it was just, we were doing the same thing. We're like, wow, we're linked to him. We're linked to Mutu, the top scorer in Serie A at the time. You know, and then there was like, coming into the club now, looking back, it was like very much the lads who, if it was the lads who got there, your Gronkiers, your Hasselbanks, your Iders, they'd got the job done. And Matt, put yourself in their shoes. And now all of a sudden, this is exciting, great for the club, but there's a lot of competition coming in. So there's a lot of egos in the nice sense of the word. Good players, all top players have a slight ego. I was just in the middle of it, this young lad. I think, how am I going to find my feet here? Like, where am I going to play? How am I going to pick off, you know, how am I going to get in ahead of Petit and Varane? And Jeremy would just, you know, he'd come in, he'd played for Real Madrid, won Champions League. So there was so much quality in that team and so many big players. And I was just doing my thing, trying to find my feet.
So what was that first day of training like? Because I remember chatting to you years ago and you said you drove into Harlington and you thought you'd gone to the wrong place.
Yeah. I'd actually never played at Harlington in the youth team, mad as it sounds. I don't know why. We'd never played against Chelsea. So like JT said, the training ground's a bit ropey. And then I'm seeing fellas getting out of their car with hockey sticks and things like that we shared with. And I'm like, Chad Waleef at West Ham is a dive as well. Like, it wasn't great back in them days. But Harlington was under that. And I'm like, wow, this is like, I'm seeing like Marcel Dess. I remember walking into a room and seeing Marcel. And he was actually writing his book. He was doing his autobiography and he was picking it. And he was picking pictures for his autobiography. He showed me a picture and I was just chatting to him. Well, hey, you know, and he was like, showing me pictures of him with a World Cup. I was like, yeah, you got to choose that one, Marcel. And I'm like helping him look at pictures of him growing up. And yeah, choose that one for your book. But then you walk outside and there'll be five fellas, middle-aged men, who go in to play hockey. And then we'd have to leave the changing room half one, two. These great players, World Cup winning players, to get out so they can quickly wipe it down. And then, you know, this fella can come in and they can play their competitive hockey. It was insane. It was absolutely insane that we had this owner and then this training ground. But it was great fun there. It was great fun.
Do you remember the first time you met Mr. Abramovich?
I think it was after one of the games, yeah. I mean, he's very much like, there wasn't many, he didn't give much away, Roman. He was very interested in the first, early on, you have to remember he was a man in his 30s, just bought a football club, he was loving life. And he was in and he had his guys with him and he loved coming in after a game because there's no better place in the world then when you've won a big game of football and you get back in the change room. It's just a beautiful, the emotion, because you'd gone to war with your fans, with your players, with 50,000 fans, 40,000 fans screaming for you. If you score a last minute winner and you're like coming back from war with the spoils and you'd like, we've won, and it's like, he loved, I'm sure, I just got the sense when he come in, Roman, because they say money can't buy that. Well, he obviously has, but it cost a couple of billion to get involved in. And he was part of us. So he like come. So it would have been after one of the games first met him. And I just remember looking at him thinking, he's loving this. You know, like you don't really see owners in that capacity. You know, I never saw Terence Brown come into the dressing room at West Ham. He was a lovely fella, by the way. Really, really nice guy. But Roman was young and he was like, it felt like we was a bit of a gang. Do you know what I mean? And we put together and, I think having Harlan and there's like a bit of a, listen, it was a Kazi. Like, let's not get anything other than what it was. And that, coupled with all the money in the world, all of these great players coming together, we felt such a togetherness and a spirit, like us against football, really. And that's how it felt.
And that first summer, do you remember your first press conference?
With Seba, yeah.
Duffer, I mean, Jeremy. Marco Ambrosio randomly.
Marco. Again, it was like, it's probably small fry now. There was just all the journalists, all faces I'd seen before, you know. Some, you know, but it was very intimate. Like compared to when I'd played for England by then. The England press conferences in them generation was like tough. They'd put a 19-18-year-old on there and you'd have all of the big hitters, the editors of the big newspapers, and they'd be grilling you and there'd be cameras everywhere. So even when I signed for Chelsea, the Stamford Bridge wasn't big enough for a big press room like there is now. It just felt small. And I actually quite liked it because Damien Duff was seventeen million. You know, he's a bigger signing than me. Seba was like the big star. So it was easy for me. I just sat there, answered a few questions. You know, like I said, I wasn't supposed to really, I think from their perspective, they fully expected Seba Varon to be the one that makes the big impact. Well, he was bought for that, weren't he? He was the, you know, so I just remember it. I don't remember anything. It wasn't grand at all.
How is that as well when you turn up, like you say, you're 21, I'm 21, and I'm just at university having a good time, and you've got these people turning up who watch you every week, know you.
Yeah.
They know your face.
Yeah.
And you're looking at them like, I don't really know who you are. And you've got these flash bulbs going off. You've just cost 6.6 million.
It's like, it's just your lived experience. It's what you have to remember. Like I was in the first team, when I was 21, probably equivalent of a 25-year-old. I've been first team. I was captain of West Ham and I've been in the first team since I was 17. And I was always front and center for anything in front of the media anyway. They always pushed me in front of the media. So I was used to it to a certain degree. So I had a level of maturity for that. And again, everything happens so quick when you're in football. It ain't until you finish it and you think about it. Yeah, it's weird to be that as an experience. But it was just a case of you just wanted the press conference to finish and go about. And like I said, we were such a good group. Training was so much fun, you know. It was competitive but fun, and we had a good time off the pitch as well.
And with Ranieri,
yeah,
that first summer, like you say, he's in the eye of the storm. He was, you know, the dead man walking, as they called him in the media, and he sort of battled off Sven, but then that whole season it just gathers pace. What was it like working under him? Because you'd been under Harry and others.
Yeah,
I guess playing under him was completely different, right? Italian manager.
Tactically, it wasn't nothing unusual to what we played. 4-4-2 mainly, and sometimes we flipped it to a diamond. You know, I played off the left or the right. As it happens at West Ham, I'd been playing middle of a four, you know, so there's many positions for me to play in the team, you know. So tactically, I wouldn't say there's anything outrageous. It was just the quality at his disposal that Claudio had and managing it. And we was aware that, you know, every time we'd lost the game, he was in for the chopping, you know. He could go, couldn't he? I mean, and I remember, like, he was the tinker man, wasn't he? He's actually ahead of his time, because if you look at football now, look at the current Chelsea team, everyone uses their squad, don't they? Man City, the best team around at the moment. If you couldn't guess Man City's team for the next Premier League game, you could not guess it. You could maybe guess Kevin De Bruyne, Erling Haaland, Rodri. That's it, probably. He mixes the centre-halves up. So he was moving it around. So we all had to sort of, I think by the end of the season, I started 25 and come off the bench 25. So I was involved constantly. I was always, there were some players who were, you know, wasn't playing at all. Do you know what I mean? Because we had such a big squad, which was unusual in them days. But I was always involved. And I always had it in my mind, by the end of the season, I want to be playing every game. That was my goal in that season. Can I play well enough to be given? And he would turn to me and, you know, like, he'd either start me or get me on in games. So it was actually 50 times I played, I think, that season. Around that number. I might be wrong. I don't know what's in my head.
So that that season under Ranieri, the defining part of it was the Champions League run.
Yeah.
Arsenal were the invincibles, but then Chelsea did what no other English team did that season and beat them, Wayne Bridge. But then the semi against Monaco. Now, I don't know, when we spoke to JT, we told him some stuff about Ranieri that he said he didn't know.
Right.
So what Ranieri says is the night before the Monaco game in Monaco,
yeah,
he found out that Roman had been talking to Jose.
Really?
And he said it messed him up.
Really?
He said, I felt like I had to go and do something. And he said it just confused me. He said, really? And that's what led to...
There was some strange... I remember... So
well, you were on the bench and didn't get on.
Yeah, so this is so... And I'd been playing quite well, I think, leading up to that game. And I thought to myself I had a chance of maybe even starting the game. But as a 21-year-old away from home in Europe, in semi-final, the biggest club game in the club's history at the time, which it probably was... You know, he went with experience. I can't remember who he started with. I remember Veron being struggling. Veron was on the bench and Seba saying to me, he had his flip-flops on, you know, and he was like, he said, I can't play. I said, I'm not right, but he wants me on the bench for my experience. Now, again, your memory plays tricks on you. So I'm thinking, it's all going wrong. And I'm watching Claudio and I'm thinking, I remember Robert Hoof playing right back, Scott Parker playing right midfield. Now, Scott come in as the midfielder and he was electric at Charlton and he sort of like, he couldn't find his feet after he's in the, you know, but it was Claudio was trying to get him into the team and he's playing him on the right. Scott would tell you himself, he's not on the right of a four. He can't, you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, what's he doing? Like, what? And then it all went wrong. Things were going wrong on the pitch and he kept looking over Claudio and Seba was like, be ready, you're going to come on, like, he ain't going to pick me on. And he put Seba on. And Seba was like, I don't think Seba thought he was coming on. So that confused me. And then I can understand with Claudio. I didn't know that he'd spoke to Jose or Claudio has found out he spoke to Jose, but that would probably make me realise some of the decisions he wasn't thinking right. Jimmy played right midfield at some point in the game. And really, we sort of, but really, we scored out there, didn't we? And we're in the game, you know? So I remember thinking, one, thinking we can beat them. And two, thinking relieved that we didn't mess it up completely. And hopefully I'll get a chance to play at Stamford Bridge. Yeah, that's what my memories of that game. Just strange, like some of the decisions he made, yeah.
'Cause it felt like, the league was gone, but Arsenal were just doing they were hitting their their top point.
Yeah.
They were peaking, right? And then it was almost like, whoa, but Chelsea about to win the Champions, because it opened up. Chelsea beat Arsenal and it was whoever won that game, the idea was they would win it, right?
Yeah.
But then Jose's Porto play Monaco and they win. But, you know, some people say, you know, imagine if Chelsea got through against Monaco, would Jose have come here? Because would he have been able to lose to Chelsea and come here, or beat Chelsea and come here?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of sliding doors moments in that Champions League run. The Champions League night here against Monaco was some of the best atmosphere I've heard at the Bridge as well. What I remember from that game, obviously Jesper had found himself, think of all the signings we'd made, and Jesper found himself back into the team. Jesper was a good player. He'd done really well for Chelsea. And he scored that night, right? The great goal, yeah? And then I remember slipping Jimmy in for a chance. And in front of goal, if I had to put my life on any player scoring, out of all the players I've played with, Jimmy would be in the top three. And he'd missed a chance. But we got the second goal. And you're thinking the place is alight. And then I just think that a lot of that early Champions League things, I think there was somebody upstairs, the gods weren't with us because we were so good that night at the start of the game. And we were better than them, that's for sure. But on that night, they scored and then Morientes scored and it just fizzled out. And then I think Claudio knew from that moment on that was his chance gone at Chelsea, which is a shame because I think he's a top manager. He's gone on to prove that. He's a good guy. And I think Chelsea fans will always look at him fondly for his time at the club.
So when Jose came in soon after,
yeah,
what shifted? What changed?
He came in, he was just like a force of nature. You know, we'd all seen him run up and down the tunnel at Old Trafford. I'd admired I watched his Porto team that beat Celtic. And by the way, even if we'd have beaten Monaco, I'm not sure we could have beaten that Porto team with the way we played with a 4-4-2 against his. They was like trailblazers, like, and then he's come here and he just sort of. I remember the meeting where he said, "We are going to win the title and it's going to be on this date. And if you follow me," it just said it with such assuredness. Not like you can tell when a manager's faking things, you know. But he said it with such an assured nature that we're going to win it on this day and this is how we're going to do it. And like the lads have just, he had all of the lads eating at the palm of his hands, and anyone that he sensed wasn't was out, like your Mutus, whoever went out that door that day, that summer, they were at some point he would have sensed, because training was like, I'd never seen anything like it. It was just so intense. We were like caged animals. And the quality that he brought in as well. The first big decision was putting Big Pete in ahead of Carlo. I did not see that coming because Carlo was a hero here and he'd done great for the club. And Pete was a young goalie. So that straight away showed me, wow, this guy, reputations don't mean nothing to this guy. And I thought, right, I could work with that. You know what I mean? I like that. I like someone who's in control and someone who's straight with you. And he certainly was straight with his players, and I liked it.
In part two of the Joe Cole tapes, we'll be getting into how things changed at Chelsea under Jose Mourinho, exploring his relationship with the players who would win Chelsea their first title in 50 years. Part two is streaming now. You've been listening to a Chelsea Sideline Club podcast. The full credits for this series can be found in our show notes. For more content like this and to join our growing community of Chelsea fans, become a Chelsea Sideline Club member on Apple Podcasts or via our website, chelseasideline.club.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.